Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Class Acts Victoria podcast. I'm your host, Brendan Toohey. I'm a clarinet and saxophone player living in Melbourne, Australia. The Class Acts Victoria podcast and the Class Acts Victoria magazine are publications of the Victorian Clarinet and Saxophone Society. The Society is a member-driven, not-for-profit organisation with the goal of promoting clarinet and saxophone playing in Victoria and Australia. Today, we're interviewing Nicole Cannon, who's a clarinet performer, teacher, researcher extraordinaire. She's currently the head of woodwinds at Monash University in Melbourne. I hope you'll enjoy her responses. If you prefer to listen to your podcast as an audio-only format, you can download that from the Victorian Clarinet and Saxophone Society website, which is www.classax.org. You can also download the show notes for today's episode, which will include links to any events, products, or information talked about in the episode. If you have any feedback, please feel free to leave a comment on YouTube or send an email to classaxvictoria@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure you like this video, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and hit the bell so you get notified when we upload our next episode. For now, sit back, relax, and enjoy our interview with Nicole Cannon. Thank you. Nicole, Dr. Nicole Cannon.
Brendan.
Thank you so much for joining me.
Pleasure.
On the first ever episode of the Victorian, what am I calling it? The Class Acts Victoria podcast.
Oh, wow. No pressure.
Our first guest.
This is so exciting.
We've had all sorts of scheduling things and technology things, but we've overcome it all.
Yep.
Probably just the hardest part is finding a spare hour to sit down together to chat. You're a very busy woman.
Yes.
Thanks for making the time.
Oh, no, this is great. Thank you.
Before we get officially underway,
yeah,
I wanted to share something with you.
Yeah.
I've been a big fan of yours for a long time before I even knew that I was a fan of yours.
Okay.
Because when I was a young clarinetist growing up in sort of the mid to late 2000s,
yeah,
I listened to a lot of Clarity Quartet music,
yes,
which I only later found out that was largely your sort of brainchild.
Yeah, fantastic. That's right.
We'll talk about Clarity a bit later on.
Yeah, for
but,
sure.
But for now, I'm going to dive into some questions.
Okay.
Starting with, could you please briefly introduce yourself and we'll take it from there in as much or as little detail as you like.
Sure.
Just for people who don't know who you are, how would you introduce yourself?
How would I introduce myself? I would probably say that I am a contemporary artist who has always loved music since I was very small. And that the thing that really has, I guess, kept me in the game is that I really deeply believe in the transformative, positively transformative power of the arts and the way that it can enrich people, uplift them, create community, bring them together. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, in these crazy times and this really fast-paced world, more and more I think we need music as a space for solace and hope and optimism and connection. And, you know, it's really interesting because obviously when I was a younger musician, I thought, well, the way to do this is I'm going to go and study it. I want to be as good as I can be and have all these great experiences. And I think that that is super important. And, you know, discovering how you bring out the best in yourself is really great. But I think one of the interesting learnings of all the different things I've done in music, because I initially started on piano, took up the clarinet. I did clarinet as my major instrument in my undergraduate degree. I did piano as an instrument study. So I worked professionally as a clarinetist and also as an accompanist and a repetiteur, a choral conductor. So I did lots of sort of different things. I think more and more the sort of sum total of all those experiences has really been, well, it's important to be great at what we do and be really well informed, but But actually, it's just also really important to celebrate our humanity. And I think that's one of the things that I just sort of really love about being a musician is kind of the opportunities it gives you to sort of connect with other creative people and meet audiences of all different ages. And I've been really lucky in my career to have very, very varied experiences that have helped me to understand the impact and the power of music in many different sort of walks of life and stages of life.
Amazing. That's such an incredible, all-encompassing answer. And yeah, you touched on something that I was going to mention next, which is you've had a very varied experience across a wide range of fields.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I read your biography, you're extremely accomplished in lots of things. And it made me think, I don't know where to start asking questions. So actually, it's interesting, on your website, you've got two biographies. One is the short version and one is the long version. And I love that. I think that's so, so funny. So if I sort of chip away at a few questions, I apologize if I miss anything, but feel free to, if there's something in particular you really want to talk about, we can steer the direction in that way. But bringing this back to clarinet a little bit, could you describe how Monash University is partnering with the Victorian Clarinet and Sax Society this year?
Yeah, so every year we do a woodwind day. And one of the things that we love to do is kind of make connections through that woodwind day. Because obviously after COVID, one of the things that I'm really concerned about and sort of committed to is making sure that we've got a really great sort of talent pool of young people sort of coming through who feel ready or have the option or the inclination to study music, but also so that we can create a space in what we do for people who've gone through and continue to play, and they don't maybe play at a full professional level, or they're doing pro-am, or they're just playing for their own enjoyment, that we have a space that really supports that. And then the other thing, of course, is this idea of having professional development, that even when we've been playing for a long time and we're very experienced, it's always kind of refreshing to hear other insights and other ideas. So it was really terrific to have a meeting with Joanne Griffiths when Classics was kind of looking around to see where the home was going to be for the competition this year, and to have a conversation around what Classics is trying to do, which I really admire. And I think it's really important that we have spaces in our community where people can sort of gather over a creative interest and sort of passion. So this year we've sort of really decided to work together. So our Woodwind Day is going to incorporate a bunch of teacher PD. We've got some fantastic guests. We've got lots of support, including Classax, but also Yamaha Daddario, Online Virtuosi. I don't want to forget anyone, Oswins, Haynes, Flutes and Flutists. So it's not just for clarinet and saxophone, we're also doing double reeds and flute. But we're really excited because we're going to have some ensembles in the afternoon, and we're going to have a come and try the Classics saxophone ensemble. Sunday afternoon is actually their normal rehearsal time. So anyone who wants to come and like check it out and have a go can actually sit in the ensemble. And then we're going to be finishing our day with a great kind of showcase concert with everyone playing. And one of the other Classics ensembles, Clarimania, is going to perform as well. So I'm really excited just to show in and through that day, like how creative and amazing people who live in Melbourne and in Victoria are. I think this is really, you know, when I moved here, I was kind of like, what's the creative epicenter of Australia? And I, you know, I don't want to get like lots of emails from people who don't live in Melbourne going, hey, but I really think there's a wonderful creativity here, and a tremendous respect for people who sort of do their own thing and want to do kind of original stuff. So, you know, I'm hoping that our partnership this year is really just the beginning of kind of, you know, in the role that Monash has as a large institution in our community, supporting the making of connections and supporting thriving communities in music. That's really what I'm interested in doing. And it's great that there's just so much kind of alignment of values, I think, with what Classics is doing and what I'm sort of really committed to doing too.
Yeah, fantastic. It's really great actually, because younger school age students who, you know, play in the Classics competition, and then they see that there's events outside of that with the Monash Woodwind Day, they see this sense of progression, and then they can obviously study music at Monash or elsewhere, and then they can join the Classics ensemble
later in life after, you know, so there's this real progression, which is great for them to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we've done this year also as part of the partnership is the workshops that we're doing on the Woodwind Day, because Woodwind Day is going to be before the Class X competition. We've designed the topics of the workshops so that they complement and support people who are thinking of going in the Class X competition. So if you think, oh, I want to think a little bit more about how I'm using my body in performance, or how I'm being really stylistically informed in the way that I'm doing phrasing in, say, a Mozart church sonata or a Brahms sonata, that we've got workshops that will really sort of support that. Or if you're playing a piece in a jazz style and you're not necessarily a jazz player, you know, so fantastic. Angela Davis is going to be actually talking about how you think about, you know, creating a personal jazz sound and approach to jazz. So, you know, lots of really great things in terms of supporting people to do exactly what you just said, not just do the thing. So not like just come to my thing, but also come and learn things here that will support the next step for you.
And obviously make lots of connections with people, expand your network.
Yeah,
it's a social hang too.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm looking forward to it. I'll definitely be there.
Yeah, great.
I usually don't play with the saxophone group, but I think I'll jump in and give it a toot. And
see what happens. Awesome, yeah.
Do you know what day it is off the top of your head?
It's Sunday the 4th of May between 10 and 4. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Star Wars Day.
Star Wars Day, I know. I think we're going to have to do some cheesy Star Wars references in our concert.
Excellent. Yeah. Love it. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Turning the spotlight back on yourself for a moment.
Yeah.
Are you from Melbourne originally?
No, I grew up in Canberra.
Okay.
So I studied at ANU in the class of Alan Vivian.
Yep.
David Griffiths was there. We were there at the same time.
Amazing.
So, yeah, and it was a really amazing place to be at that time. A lot of very dynamic sort of environment. A lot of great players. Obviously, Canberra Wind Soloists were all there. So really wonderful to be able to, from a chamber music point of view, learn from the wind soloists individually and collectively, and really draw on that in terms of my own sort of chamber music formation. I spent a couple of years in my degree really just focusing on wind trio, wind quartet and quintet sort of combinations, and then also having access to extraordinary string players and pianists like David Pereira and Suzanne Powell, then getting into the piano trio repertoire, you know, which was really sort of just such a fantastic opportunity. I think that's where I really got bitten by the chamber music bug.
Cool. Yeah. And is that how kind of Clarity ended up forming, or is that through something else?
That is how Clarity formed. Yeah, we were asked to play at an open day.
Ah.
And we had such a great time. I said, oh, you know, why don't we, should we keep doing this? Should we do it again? And we had a concert manager at that time called Jan Jennings. So, you know, I'm sure people who studied it there at ANU would remember her. And Jan was great. She didn't mince words. She called a spade, and she was just fantastic at all the management side of things. And so after that, when we decided to sort of get the clarinet quartet thing happening, we would just go, Jan, can you tell us how to do this? Because there was really no career development coursework. There was one unit which was write a 150-word bio, apply for a German government scholarship.
Oh, wow.
I think that was it. Like, it was pretty...
Why a German government scholarship?
I think because the person teaching it, that was the thing they knew how to do, maybe.
Yeah.
And so I really found that I had all of these incidental conversations where I was sort of bailing up Jan going, Jan, how do you do this? How do you do that?
Yeah.
And that was really the beginning, I guess, of a really great education, not just in a quartet sort of situation, but also in, you know, creating your own ensemble and kind of seeing where that can take you.
Amazing.
Yeah.
On the topic of applying for scholarships overseas, you were awarded a Fulbright scholarship to study overseas, is that right?
No, I didn't get a Fulbright. When I went to France, I had
the
Australian Musicians Award from the Australian Music Foundation.
Yeah.
And I also had a couple of different pockets of funding from Ian Potter Cultural Trust,
which was
really great.
Yep.
And I am a Churchill Fellow, so I did get a Churchill Fellowship as well.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice, amazing. Yeah. Yeah. I think I just mixed up Fulbright and Churchill. That's what I was thinking of in my mind.
Yeah.
Amazing. So when you went overseas to France to study with Philippe Couper, I believe. Amazing.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Incredible. Yeah. Culturally, a very different kind of learning environment. You know, when you do your audition, You do your audition in front of everyone. So it's wow. not like a closed sort of environment that it is here. And then when they are telling you if you've got in or not, they call everyone back into the room who's just done all their auditions, and then they read your names out in rank order.
Wow.
With the comment from the jury, like if everyone thought you should get in, then you get a certain mention, and if you, you know, as you go through. So that was quite different for me. All of our lessons happened in front of everyone else in the class.
Wow.
So I found that quite intimidating at first.
Of course, yeah.
But actually it was fantastic because I think you start to see everyone has a bad day. Mm. It's not just you. And you also see everyone struggles with different challenges in their playing. Mm. And you have the wonderful opportunity to learn from everyone's growth in that class. So you get your own lesson, but you can also then watch and go, here's this other repertoire that this other person's doing, and how is this being managed and approached. And I mean, Philippe is just an extraordinary player and musician. He's just so committed to every part of every note.
Yeah.
And it was really wonderful to be so immersed in that environment with him for a year.
Yeah.
And I certainly learned, you know, that was kind of like a landmark year for me. I think I really had a great opportunity, not just to develop my playing, but to think about the kind of musician that I wanted to become.
Mm.
And I guess, why was I even doing any of it in the first place? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, it was fantastic. And then, you know, in the conservatoire at Versailles, you can hang your head out the window and you can see the chateau. So, you know, we could go up and have picnics up there and sort of spend that time and just be immersed, you know, in a cultural education, not just a musical one.
Mm.
And I remember on the first or second day, he just said, I don't want to hear anyone speaking in any language other than French in my class. So I took him at, you know, he's like, if you've come here for a cultural experience, have one.
Mm.
So I dutifully committed to, you know, speaking French, and everyone thought I was a bit simple because I sort of spoke French a bit like a four-year-old when I first got there. But it was really the best thing that I could have done because, you know, subsequently on my return trips to France, really one of the things that has massively helped in terms of a lot of connections and other projects that I did later on with the Tarragato and Claude Delong really came out of being able to communicate in French.
Mm.
So, you know, that was also a really terrific thing for me to sort of have with that, not just the musical thing. And interestingly, speaking in French helped me to understand some of the things he was doing on the clarinet in terms of mouth shape and voicing and thinking about all of those other things. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was just a tremendous experience. I'm so glad I got to have it, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. I did meet Philippe when he came to Melbourne for the Australian Clarinet and Sax Festival. I think
yes.
It was 2011,
mm-hmm.
And Alan came as well,
yep.
So that was lovely.
Yep.
I had to play Francais concerto for him very badly. He ripped me to shreds, but that's fine. But yeah, amazing player.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Very cool. Anyone who can just pull out Francais at 9 o'clock on a Friday morning, and he did that in one of the classes.
Yeah.
You just go, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, he played it for the composer himself, so that's to be expected, I guess.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Tarragato.
Mm.
Could you describe for our listeners what that is? How did you get into this?
Brendan, it was love at first sound.
Okay.
I was in the Musical Instrument Museum in Brussels,
cool.
And they have this headphone tour that you can do. And basically, it's really cool. You walk around and you stand in front of the cabinets and then you hear the sound of the instruments.
Cool.
And I think I knew of the Tarragato because I'd been out to the clarinet quartet. We did some things with Paul Harvey, the clarinetist and composer Paul Harvey.
Yep.
And we went out to Nella Hall. He organised a tour for us.
Cool.
And in their cabinet, they had some Tarragatos. And so we were talking about it. And anyway, years later, I hear this sound and I think, what is that instrument? I have to play it. And discover it's a Tarragato. And then I went on this kind of European goose chase trying to find one. I met like a lady, you know, in the car park of this London train station. She had this like dodgy instrument wrapped up in a tea towel. No, that's not going to work. And somehow got onto this chain-smoking Italian architect who had started to make instruments, and he makes all kinds of instruments. Riccardo von Vittorelli is his name. And so I wrote to him, and he made me a tarragato. I went to his workshop. He showed me, he said, what wood would you like? I chose the wood.
Wow.
I chose to have an instrument in C. Normally the tarragato in B flat is longer and has a bigger range, lower range. But for my right hand especially, it was just the spacing of the tone holes were too far apart. So I had a tarragato in C made for me.
Cool.
And I really wanted to have, having had such an orthodox formal music education, I really wanted to have an unmediated experience of learning an instrument. So, you know, no criticism of having teachers and formal lessons. That's all really, really great. But I wanted to see what would happen if I taught myself the instrument. So I quite deliberately didn't want to engage a lot with listening to recordings or necessarily playing Hungarian music. You know, I obviously researched the history of the instrument, and I love that it was a symbol of freedom and celebration of Magyar culture. But I kind of wanted to see what it would look like if I made it a symbol of my own freedom. And so I commissioned a completely new repertoire for the instrument from composers who also didn't have much knowledge of the instrument. And so I had got this very diverse set of pieces that are really kind of what composers imagine the tarragato can be and do. And some of them are based on very early and ancient musics, and some are very contemporary. And there's, you know, they've got almost like this kind of boppy, funky backing track made out of sampled sounds from the instrument, wow, key clicks and things like that. So, you know, that's been a really tremendous project that I've really sort of enjoyed developing over the years.
Fantastic. Yeah. So it's a cone, right? It's a cone
conical bore, yeah.
With a single reed, like a clarinet.
Yeah, single reed. I think I have it here. Do you want to see it?
Oh, sure. And is its range fairly similar to a B flat clarinet or C clarinet?
No, look, it can do, I mean, 2 and a bit octaves, but really it's happier in an octave and a half range. Okay. So.
Oh, wow.
This is it.
Very cool.
If you've got a good sight line there.
Yeah, that's perfect.
And then what I had, so I do have a wooden mouthpiece that was made for me, but obviously with the issue with that is it's a little bit unpredictable.
Yeah.
And then I had the wonderful Ash, when he was working at Oswin's, he cut down an E-flat clarinet mouthpiece for me.
Oh, yes. Cool.
So, and it's got, you know, so that's kind of what it looks like. And I just use a cut down B-flat clarinet reed on it.
Cool.
And yeah, that's it. But smell that wood.
Oh yeah. Wow. It's a very rich, sweet smell.
Yeah. And it was amazing too, because, you know, when I went to play it and try it, you know, this key was quite long, and I said, oh, it's a bit tricky for me to get my hand. He said, no problem. He took the key off the instrument, hacksawed it, cut out a piece, and then soldered it back together. It's like, sorry. So
it's customized, you know, for your hands.
It's totally customized for my hands. And I mean, even just that, like,
yeah,
how special is that? That's, you know, cool. I just, anyway, it's just been a wonderful thing.
Do you feel game enough to play some notes? We kind of have to hear it now, right?
I haven't been practicing my tarragato at the moment, but what I could certainly do is share with you something of me playing. So if you want to sort of have a little link to that, because I've got some great pieces.
Will do. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's so interesting. There was something in your bio that jumped out to me.
Yes.
And, well, I'll just tell you. It says something about you being a hope action theory practitioner. And I thought, what is that? How did you get into this?
What's going on? So one of the things that I discovered, you know, when you go into a freelance career and you're trying and doing all of these different things, it sort of shapes your identity. It shapes who you are.
Yes.
And I discovered going into a lot of these really contrasting environments, that there were many things about my musical training that had served me well, but there were also a lot of other non-musical expectations in all of those environments that hadn't ever really been discussed in much depth. And so I ended up going back to do postgraduate study, and I did a PhD in classically trained musicians, self-directed career development. And one of the things, you know, that all the research says is many, many musicians feel the same as me. But also, you know, a lot of musicians asking this question of, well, how do I make this work in a way that feels good for me? You know, that thinking of that introduction I gave, it took me a long time to get to a fairly concise way of saying, these are the things that I believe in and this is why I'm a musician. But, you know, it's actually really important to have that, because then it actually helps me decide what work I'm going to say yes to and what work I say, you know what, look, here's another person that I think would be a really fantastic fit for that particular opportunity. And in terms of the careers piece, what I really noticed was that we lacked people in the field of music who are also career development practitioners. And when you have a career counselling qualification, it changes how you approach and talk through the career experience, whatever that is. So after I did my PhD, I thought, well, I can't really just sit and, you know, criticise, like, why aren't we doing this or why aren't we doing that? I probably actually need to get the qualification. So I went and did a grad dip in careers education and development to become a qualified career counsellor.
Oh, amazing.
So, and I'm never doing another degree again, and I'm saying that publicly, no more. but it was really great. And so the Hope Action Theory, it's this wonderful theory by some Canadian and American scholars that really looks at this idea that, you know, if we want to feel fulfilled in our work, in our life, we want to have certain things going for us, but also recognises, well, that's not going to be the case all the time. You know, people might have had a really hard time, say, through the pandemic, might have lost their job, might have had to transition into something they didn't choose, might suddenly have to be teaching full-time online or working from home, whatever it might be. And so Hope Action Theory is a tool that you can use when you're doing career counselling, where you can kind of see where a person is at, and then you can build in a little program of what we can do to make things better. And then you take that test again at the end and you have a look and see how a person's scores have changed. Because sometimes just the act of talking through things and working out a new plan can actually really bring up a person's sense of hope and optimism and their sort of the energy to get back in there with the goals and the visioning and the implementation of the plan. And it's just a really wonderful way of working with people, because, you know, being a working musician for a lot of people is a tough road to hoe. And I find it interesting and a bit of a shame that music has such a wonderful well-being impact on people, for the people we do the music with or the people we teach the music to. But that living that life of a professional musician can take such a toll on the musician themselves. And so, you know, something that's really important in my work, and it's why I'm here at Monash, is to be able to continue all the research work looking at what do we need in our education environments, so that we're not just training people who are really great at music, but we're training people who can really be musicians in this world, in this context, at this time, and do it with sort of poise and grace and compassion, but also with the right type of savvy so that they're going to be okay. Because I think we really, our society really needs creative people. And we need creative people who can do what they do for a living. So thinking about how we actually make that more possible for people and we make it satisfying and sustainable is kind of, you know, something that I'm very passionate, you know, as I'm, you know, in my mid-career, and when I think about, you know, not just the things that I want to do, but also the type of legacy that I want to leave. You know, I want to see if in some small way things I do can make it a little bit better for people who come after me. And one of the ways to do that is actually to really invest in the professional capital of our field, which is why it's such a privilege to work with so many young musicians here at Monash and talk with them about what they want for their future and help them make a plan to kind of realize their dreams and goals in a way that's healthy for them.
Amazing. Wow, there's so much in that field to unpack, It's such a important thing because I feel like certainly in the last 10 years, the act, I guess, or career of being a musician has changed so much for so many people.
Yeah.
It seems harder than ever to make a living doing what we love to do. So kudos to you for the amazing work you do. That's incredible.
Yeah.
I'm conscious of the time.
Okay.
I think... Are you up for a round of a little game? It's clarinet related.
Clarinet game. It's clarinet related game. All right. Okay. What's the game?
Are you familiar with Cards Against Humanity?
I have heard of it.
Okay.
But I don't know.
It's fairly simple.
Okay.
It's just question cards and answer cards.
Okay.
And they're all clarinet related.
Oh, okay.
So we'll see how this goes.
Okay, if I get them all wrong, can we delete this part of it?
We can. I don't think you can get it wrong. It's just It's just supposed to be funny.
Okay, all right.
So what we might do...
Okay.
These are the question cards. Maybe just pick, you know, five of whatever card. These are all answer cards. And you can read them. You're allowed to look at them.
Okay, one,
and they're
two.
Supposed to be funny. It's okay if you've taken more.
I think I've got lots. I've got lots. Okay, all right, right.
All right.
Okay,
I'm going to take, I don't know, six or seven.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay. So you're allowed to read them.
Okay, right. Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm going to pick a question card.
Okay. And then I just pick one of these.
You just pick something that you think is funny.
Okay. Okay.
And if it's really funny, you win a point. This question says, what non-clarinetists don't realize
is
blank, and then you get to pick something.
Do I have to, can I change, like, that breaking in new reads is...
It doesn't have to make sense.
Okay, so I just say breaking in new reads.
Okay.
Okay,
sure.
That's not very funny, though.
What non-clarinetists don't realize is, I'm going to play this card, which is, blame it on the reed.
Blame it on the reed.
So anyway.
Okay.
You get the idea.
Okay, I get it.
That
so I show you. Okay, all right.
So
okay.
Whatever card you just played, that can be discarded now.
Okay,
so
all right. Just, hang on, what do I do?
We don't want to reuse that one again. Okay.
I just lost the card.
That's fine.
No, there it is. Okay.
The right. Next.
I'm not very good at this. I'm not good at this game. Can we do Uno instead?
This question card is the must-see event at this year's Clarinet Fest is blank.
Charles Neidich Bassa Clarinet.
Oh, yeah? Okay. That seems too real. I think it's the wackier and the more nonsensical, the better.
Okay.
So, the must-see event at this year's Clarinet Fest, all 136 military marches by John Philip Sousa.
Donning your lederhosen for polka season.
Oh, nice.
Can we do that? Can we do that in
that's
costume?
Good. All right. Next one. Scholars, you'll like this one. Scholars have unearthed a clarinet concerto by Beethoven. The third movement is unexpectedly full of
circular breathing for 9 minutes.
Yeah.
Nice. Yes. Okay. Now I'm getting it. Oh, I could have done double tonguing. Okay. All right. Okay.
What am I going to play for that one? The third movement is unexpectedly full of 32 Etudes by Cyril Rose. Cool. All right. We'll just do one or two more. This one's a double.
Okay.
My private teacher told me that I need blank if I want to get better at blank. So you get to play two cards. You get to play two cards.
Okay, right. My private teacher told me that I need to eat Cheetos right before playing.
Oh, gosh.
If I want to get better at... contralto clarinet squeaks that peel the enamel off your teeth.
Amazing. All right, I'm going to play. My private teacher told me that I need a competition to see who can play the softest altissimo G if I want to get better at channeling Wile E. Coyote playing bass clarinet in Ferde Groffi's Grand Canyon Suite.
Okay. you got better cards than me, Brendan.
Maybe. All right, I'm going to discard those ones. All right, we might have to make this one the last round.
Okay.
Final question. I'm not like all those other clarinet players with their tone and musicality. Instead, I prioritize blank.
Oh, cracks. And double tonguing.
Double tonguing, nice. Mine is Anton Stadler pawning Mozart's clarinet concerto after Mozart's untimely death.
Okay.
Great. There you go. The more nonsensical, the better.
I love it.
Nicole, thank you so much for doing this and for your incredible answers. Is there anything that you want to plug at the last minute? Any upcoming performances or just Monash events or anything in general? Or final parting words? Take us out?
Yes. One thing I would say, I've got this new project.
Oh, excellent.
One of my favourite things of all time is getting new music.
Yes.
And it could be new to me, could be new. And I've been so lucky to have many pieces written for me into premiere works. And so one of the things that I'm gradually going to be doing over the next couple of years is recording all of the Australian works on the VCE set repertoire list.
Ah, yes.
And also on that big one from AMC, which has works after 1990.
Ah, yep.
So VCE, and also looking at AMEB grade 6 and above. So we've just started a new project. It's up on YouTube, and I've got some of those pieces on there. The Don Banks prologue, Night Piece and Blues for Two is there, mm-hmm. Katie Abbott Autumn Song, and a bunch of other things. And we're gradually going to be adding to those works.
Great.
As part of getting, you know, the next generation of clarinet really excited about playing Australian music and about discovering all the wonderful repertoire that we have from Australian composers, many of them living and many of them women. Really excited about that project, and that's coming up on YouTube now. So if anyone's interested in checking that out, or if anyone's interested in VCE workshops especially, that's something that I'm kind of really adding into what I'm doing at the moment. So
amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much. I'll get all the details and we'll put it in the description or whatever of this podcast. Thank you again.
And thanks, Brendan.
We'll see you next time at the competition, or the Woodwind Day actually is coming
fantastic.
Up first. I'll see you
great.
There.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yay. Thanks for listening to the very first episode of the Classics Victoria podcast. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Nicole Canham and found her responses interesting and informative. I completely forgot to give a shout out to the creator of the clarinet-related card game that we played, Larkin Sanders. She is an American clarinetist who runs the Clever Clarinetist website. The card game is called the Anti-Practicing Clarinet Club, and you can download it completely for free off the website. You can also purchase a professionally printed version if you prefer. Next time, we're going to be talking all things saxophone with Justin Liu from Air Music Australia. Make sure that you subscribe to the YouTube channel, like this video, and make sure that you hit the bell so you get notified when our next episode drops, hopefully very soon. Thanks again for listening. I'm your host, Brendan Toohey. I look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks.